Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Well, you know the saying that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. In a similar vein, I think the water crisis has made us all much more acutely aware of how much we depend on water supply and how many of our aspects of our lives are affected when we don't have a regular supply of clean and abundant water. And it's also made us look a lot more closely at the state of our existing water systems in Cape Town and the many challenges that they face. And with all of that in mind, I was delighted to come across a recent Facebook post with photographs of school children up to their knees in water, delving into Cape Town's rivers and finding out more about those ecosystems. And this alerted me to the fact that there is, in fact, a group of very passionate Cape Town scientists who are getting kids out of the classroom and onto the riverbanks to try and introduce them in the most practical way possible to just how important it is to care for our rivers and the ecosystems they support. The project is called Living Labs, and it springs from UCT's Freshwater Research Centre. And delighted to welcome two of the program coordinators with us in studio today, Jeremy Shelton and Jordan Calder. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Jeremy, before we talk about Living Labs itself, won't you just sketch for us what the Freshwater Research Centre is all about?
Cool, sure thing. So the Freshwater Research Centre is a non-profit that's been going for about 5 years, and it actually had its genesis in the freshwater unit at the University of Cape Town.
Yep.
But it's now an independent non-profit
okay.
that actually runs out of Cormickey at the moment. And what we do at the Freshwater Research Center is three different things. The main thrust of our work is research, so trying to understand changes in aquatic ecosystems. And often our projects focus on interactions between people and ecosystems and to try and understand those interactions. We also do training, so to upskill people and other scientists in South Africa in freshwater research. And the final sort of prong of our approach is education. And that's where the Living Labs program comes in.
Okay. How long has the Living Labs program been running?
It's been running for about a year. So we actually launched it last year fortuitously on World Water Day, which was the 22nd of March. And yeah, so just over a year now, about a year and a month. Yeah.
Okay. So you've spoken there about this interaction between people and the ecosystem. And that really, I know, is the fundamental philosophy behind this program, that you want to repair what you see as something of a disconnect, particularly between the youth and the environment.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I started thinking about conservation slightly differently over the last sort of year or so, in a different way to how I was trained to think about it at university. And I think there's kind of two ways of seeing it. The one way is this idea of understanding which ecosystems are sensitive, which areas need protection, and doing our best to safeguard those and to look after them that way. And then the other way is kind of a more, I guess, organic bottom-up approach, which is to, I guess, cultivate a more environmentally conscious society so that effortlessly we think more and do more for nature and for biodiversity. And that's kind of the setting of this education vision.
Yeah. So it's literally that bottom-up approach. So rather than deal with the consequences of the thoughtless approach down the line, cleaning up rivers, undoing damage that's been done, engage the young people while they're still open to broadening their minds and make them appreciate those rivers in their pristine condition, and hopefully they never get to the point where they become polluters, for example.
Prevention is better than cure.
Absolutely. Jordan, how long have you been associated with the project?
So Jeremy and I founded it together.
Okay.
A year ago. And I'm actually a full-time teacher at Cedar House School in
yep.
Kenilworth, and then help run the Living Labs program in my limited free time. So yeah, I've been doing it for a year, and whenever I get a chance, I get out into the river with them. For example, yesterday I combined both my jobs, I suppose, and got my own class, my own grade 10 life sciences class, onto the river for a couple of hours, and I've never seen the kids more excited about anything that I've taught them. So it was awesome.
I mean, getting involved on a practical level with the subject you're studying is the best possible way of learning all about it and learning to care for it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a teacher, obviously it's not just your own students that you are getting involved here and your own particular river. The idea, if I understand correctly, the idea is you find schools and you find the river close to that school to help get those kids involved with. Is that correct, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, I guess our grand vision is to kind of grow somewhat of a network, because if you zoom out and you look at a map of the Western Cape or even of South Africa, and you look at rivers, you see these blue lines everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at a map of schools, there are these schools everywhere. And it's once you see that picture that you realize, wow, there's a lot of cool potential here to connect schools to rivers. And so our vision is quite big, but at the moment we're actually operating quite small, and we're working mostly on the peninsula, mostly on the rivers on the peninsula that flow all year round, rivers like the Liesbeek River. And we work with schools in those catchments that are really close. So we often have a situation where a school group can actually just walk down to a river in their backyard that's kind of pulsing with life, but maybe they didn't know about it. Mm. It's the thing about rivers. Most of what's special about them is underwater, so it's out of sight. And that's where we come in. We kind of provide that window into that world, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then river kind of does the rest.
I mean, the photographs I saw, it looked to be a bunch of teenagers poring over, I don't know what kind of insect it was, but they were looking very closely at the anatomy of something that had obviously been found skating across the top of that river. I mean, Jordan, as the teacher, what's it like for you to be able to not just say to your children, here's what's in the textbook and a river ecosystem looks like this, and this is the life cycle and this one eats that one, but to actually go and show them, here is the apex feeder in that cycle. This is what it looks like. Have a look at its wings, etc. It must help really bring the subject to life.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the last couple of weeks I've been teaching the part of the syllabus around ecosystems and biomes and trophic cascades. And the whole time I've just been itching to get the kids outside, because it felt almost like false to be teaching them about a part of life sciences, a part of biology that they could literally just exist in and feel. And there's only so much you can do with in-class activities or even videos or whatnot. So I've been just getting so excited to get them out like we did yesterday. And it was wonderful to see how very organically and naturally the experience of a Living Labs excursion complemented and just brought out the syllabus that we'd been working on. You know, we've been doing dichotomous keys where they have to identify a bug, and we've been doing that in class, and then for them to actually have to do it in the field
with
a real insect and with a purpose. Because the coolest thing about Living Labs is that we essentially get the kids to do a river health assessment. Mm-hmm. And those river health assessments are based on the presence or absence of the invertebrates that they find in the river. So it's not just about netting about and finding a couple of cool things. In order to do the assessment, they have to identify down to order level or whatever. Mm. And then, and it's tricky. You know, you get to a point, you're like, oh, I don't know what sort of gills this bug has, but you need to know. So it's a challenge, and it's so cool to see them apply their knowledge and their skills to something like that.
Is that knowledge and that detail of assessment and observation that's going on there in any way practically useful to somebody else? I'm thinking now about a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago or months ago around citizen science in the context of somebody who was taking scuba divers and asking them to monitor fish populations in the sea. Here you have kids poring over, identifying, tracking the presence of these invertebrates in the river systems. Can that information be used in any context?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And that's definitely part of what got us excited about the concept. So it's kind of a multi-pronged initiative, really. Because on the one hand, we're just really excited about getting the groups out into nature and experiencing this cool biodiversity that's in an urban area. Mm. But, and I guess learning science firsthand. But then on the other hand, these groups are actually contributing meaningful data points. And because this particular citizen science tool is built in such a way that it's really user-friendly for school levels, opens up a whole country of possibilities. And the data points collected by each school get uploaded, sometimes on site, sometimes later at night when I find some time. But one way or another, they end up on a national database. So scientists or managers or other schools anywhere can look at this database and can see this picture of river health emerging. And it's cool because you can track the changes in a particular river that a particular school might have developed a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And it's really useful for telling if there's a really rapid change going on. We call it a red flag tool. But if a river suddenly gets into trouble and needs help, our mini SAS citizen science monitoring generally picks that up really well.
Okay. For those who might have come into the conversation later in the day, let me just recap who you're listening to. With us in studio are Jordan Calder and Jeremy Shelton, who are the founders of the Living Labs project within UCT's. It's no longer UCT's. It's the Freshwater Research Centre, which was born out of UCT but is now an independent non-profit organisation, chatting to us about this Living Labs program, which brings children out of the classroom and into the river systems, doing citizen science research and getting to learn in practical terms all the stuff that they've been shown in their textbooks. We've got a voice note that's come through. Let's take a listen to that.
Hi, Pippa. This is Margie speaking. Here you're going to talk about the rivers of Cape Town. The one that bothers me the most is the Little Kaiser River. As you go along Main Road just before Takai Blue Ridge Shopping Centre, it is so full of litter and rubbish and plants and things. And yet there are two major car dealers that back onto it. One is Jaguar, the new Jaguar dealer, and the other one is Marco Toyota. And I would wonder whether maybe, you know, they could take on that little bit of river and just keep it neat and tidy. It would enhance around their businesses, and it would also enhance people traveling in that area and coming into Takai. Anyway, just an opinion. Thanks. Bye.
Margie, thanks for your voice note. The Kaiser River, one of those that you work with?
It is? Yeah, it is. It is. Definitely is. And there's lots of schools close to that river. Mm. I think Swansvaag's one of the closest ones there. And she brings up a good point. I mean, what we, I guess, are about is connecting groups of humans to their local river so that they can learn from the river, but also to kind of provide them with the means to uplift that river, uplift that aquatic ecosystem. And sometimes that can happen in the form of a litter cleanup, which is really great to see the increase in popularity of those, especially along the beaches. But I think it's starting to move up into the rivers as well. Yep. But there are other types of really cool rehabilitation activities as well, like planting indigenous plants along the riparian zone and stabilizing banks to create habitat for aquatic life. And I think while we work mostly with schools, we are definitely mindful of the potential for other organizations like car dealerships to be a part of that connection vision as well, for sure.
Margie, thanks for an interesting voice note. Cynthia on the SMS line raising what was perhaps an inevitable question about the safety and cleanliness of putting children into rivers. She says, I wouldn't like my child to get into the Eerste River. It wouldn't be healthy. Is that something that you have to be mindful of in the sections you go to, Jordan?
Yes, absolutely. And it's child safety is sort of at the top of our priority list when taking kids onto the river. And it's one of those things that you learn as you go. You're like, oh my goodness, we really need to protect these kids, of course. And the ways in which we do that is we select our sites very carefully. And if it is a site that is polluted, then we alter the program a little bit and perhaps the kids don't get as hands-on. But in the sites that we've deemed suitable, we have a number of precautionary measures. The one has been a wonderful donation from Keen Footwear in the US. They've given us 29 pairs of river shoes of varying kid sizes. So as far as we can, we dish those out and protect the kids' feet with the best possible river shoes. And we also encourage kids to bring old tackies or gumboots, because there is sometimes like a bit of glass or a shard of metal, and we want to avoid anything like that. And then we have hand sanitizer on site, and we encourage kids to utilize that as they go. And so far, so good, I can say.
Yeah. Approximately how many children have you taken to the river so far? I mean, you've been open going a little over a year now. What is it, dozens, hundreds, thousands?
Yeah, so the numbers are quite remarkable, and I think Jeremy has a better idea of that.
Yeah, about 1,000 is the answer. But we are realizing that I think we want to move in a direction of quality of the experience over the quantity of the kids that we reach. Yeah. So
You said you were a small team. So in terms of, obviously the two of you are going out there physically, taking the children to the rivers. Are there more of you? How many people are involved in this?
Yeah, they are. I mean, we have a group of amazing facilitators, and maybe it's a good time to point out that it's the facilitators and their enthusiasm and their insights and their experience that makes the program awesome. It really is. I mean, like, that's as honest as I can be. And we probably have about we have a group of about 5 to 10 facilitators, mm-hmm. and we bring in different facilitators at different times. For example, we're working with a community in Franschhoek at the moment that they don't speak any English. My Afrikaans is not amazing, so in that case, I bring in an Afrikaans facilitator to help out. Yeah, so we're pretty adaptable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A few questions coming in about the sort of the how, where, what, why, how much of this all. Firstly, is there any cost for schools to participate in this program?
There is not a cost, but we do encourage schools to donate, especially well-resourced schools,
okay,
to try to offset some of the costs for the under-resourced schools.
Well, that was going to be the next question, is what kinds of schools are taking a part in this? Because it's wonderful for any child to have exposure to this, but we know that there are schools, and then there are schools in Cape Town with very differently resourced facilities. Are you able to reach both?
We are, and we I think it's important that we do, because both have their unique sets of challenges, and both are, I think, both benefit from this kind of an experience in different ways. And we are moving towards, I think, a bigger proportion of under-resourced schools, but having the resourced schools there to pair up with them are really important, and it's a combination.
Okay. Another one from obviously a teacher saying, how do I make contact with you to get my class involved in this kind of opportunity, which is great. I don't know what school that is, but what is the best way to get involved?
Well, we're very active and present on social media, and our handle, I think, on most platforms is @LivingLabsZA. Otherwise, you can drop me an email, which is jeremy@frcsa.org.za. Those are the best points of contact.
Okay, frcsa.org.za, and that stands, of course, for Freshwater Research Center. Terence making the point on the SMS line that rivers are like veins in the body. Rivers are the veins in our country and cities, and when they are polluted, our countries and cities become polluted. A very good point, Terence. Perhaps a question, your observations. What is the state of our rivers, particularly here in Cape Town?
The state of our rivers in Cape Town is not amazing. It's a bit of an upsetting picture. The closer you look, the more kind of upset you get, which I think is part of our motivation for looking to contribute data on the change of rivers and looking to be involved in the upliftment of the ecology of the rivers. But there are also some beautiful, pristine sites. And I think it's that contrast that makes the rivers such awesome outdoor classrooms, because the Liesbeek River, for example, which is one of the perennial rivers flowing down Table Mountain, has in its upper parts a really beautiful, pristine habitat with all the little critters that you'd expect to find in a happy, harmonious ecosystem. And then you sort of travel down that river, and you move through into a suburban area, and you see the river shifts a bit and the ecosystem takes a bit of a knock. And then you move down into a more heavily urbanized area and it changes again. Mm. And it's kind of this gradient that we can learn from and learn through. Yeah.
Okay. So a little depressing overall, but with pockets of pristineness. Is that a word? But what I'm looking for is that to be able to show the children, this is what it could be like and this is what it should be like in its entirety, to create that awareness at a young age. I mean, Jordan, do you think that this is a life-changing experience for those kids, that they will take away that message, that philosophy of caring for the environment that you hope it does?
Yes, I think so, definitely. And I think it's a different experience for each child. And I see that some of them perhaps came with a baseline knowledge or with some ideas and were happy to have those ideas changed or those perceptions changed. Some come with nothing. Perhaps this is the first time that they've looked at anything below the surface. And there's also these like different levels of epiphanies that happen every time we go on a Living Labs outing, whether it be, oh my goodness, the whole river system is connected, and what happens at Kirstenbosch affects what happens in Bishop's Court, affects what happens in Mowbray. There's this idea of connectedness, which is a really great way for the kids to be able to zoom out and get a perspective of the city that they live in. But then at the same time, there's these moments where where a child encounters a certain creature for the first time in its life. My personal favorite is when a kid sees a baby dragonfly for the first time, and they're like, what is this crazy thing? And then they identify it themselves, and it's, what, this is a dragonfly? That's crazy, because it looks very different.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
Exactly.
So,
you should come along. No, it's wonderful.
Okay. I mean, I can just hear the enthusiasm radiating out of you, and I wish that every child would have the opportunity to experience that. Just to recap, if you'd like to make contact with Living Labs to find out how your school could become involved, please do email jeremy@frcsa.org.za. Otherwise, look for @LivingLabsZA on the various social media channels and get your school involved. It's been fascinating to meet you both. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I think it is hugely important work. And my final question is, as an NPO, money is always going to be a problem. Is there anything our listeners can do to support what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Jordan emphatically wants to answer that. What is it, Jordan?
So as an NPO, we run on funding and donations, and there is a very appealing donate button on our Facebook page. I'm just going to say it. And maybe Jeremy wants to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, another way to get a bit more detail on what we do at the Freshwater Research Center is to look at our website, which is www.frcsa.org.za, I think.
Okay.
And on there we have we also have a donating sort of facility there, but any support of any kind is always
you can really also you can also put the FRC on your My School or Woolworths card.
Okay,
so that's,
as a beneficiary.
That's quite a cool way to do it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Jordan Calder and Jeremy Shelton, great to meet you both. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.